And then within the beautiful garden of which the Creator had provided for them, reveling in sinful disobedience, they lost that garden. They lost that paradise because of sin. And so sin destroyed paradise. And then in time, fratricide, going all the way to the time in which every thought of man was upon evil. And eventually we find that in the egotism of men that God then scattered mankind upon the face of the earth. But those events that are recorded in those early books and chapters of the Bible, they actually answer the question for us as to what brought the necessity of this cruel cross. What brought the necessity of God expressing the greatest extent of His love in giving His Son to die upon the cross. And so we are many generations separate from that event, from that time. And we look back previous to that time and we see that Jesus died for their sins, and we see that it was their sins that nailed Jesus to the cross. And so now here we are, like I say, some 2,000 years removed to it. And yet, I find myself still having sin that would be comparable to those sins that we might read about from the very beginning. And I'm not going to excuse you either, because I know that you too have sins that would be very similar to those sins that would be back in the very beginning. Now, you don't have to worry. I didn't Google you or anything like that and find out these things. I know them because of what God has revealed. God's all-seeing eye has revealed that and told us that all have sinned and fallen short of His glory. Therefore, it was as it has always been. And that is that sins common to all, including those very sins that allowed them or that prompted them or that motivated them and allowed God by His own determinate counsel to see that His Son would be crucified, as we read there in the second chapter of the book of Acts this morning, where that was God's determined counsel that this would happen. But nonetheless, we find that not only is it for sin and because of the sins before Christ ever came, or even because of our sins after the coming of Christ, and now we must look back to the cross, but we find that it was actual sinful actions of man that took Jesus to the cross. I mean, how else? I mean, if people were, you know, enlightened and they understood and they said, you know what? Our fathers had sinned, and yeah, we've had some sin in our life, but God so loved us, and now He sent His Son, and He wants us to nail Him to that cross. Man, that's going to be hard to do. I don't know about that, but if that's what God really wants, I'm sorry, Jesus. I wouldn't nail you to the cross, but, you know, God determined that that was going to have to be. And so, you know, I guess we got to fulfill, you know, the will of God, and we need to have, you know, those sins forgiven that we, you know, participated in before we knew you. But, you know, now we will accomplish God's will, and we'll just nail you to the cross. Now, is that what the Jewish leaders, and is that what, you know, a Roman governor, and is that what Roman soldiers, and is that what the people that, you know, no, wait, they cried out. Yeah, okay, they still could cry it out. Crucify Him, you know, because of thinking they're doing the will of God. But is that why they did that? That's not why they crucified Christ, was it? They were not thinking that they were accomplishing the will of God. We find that it would be the kinds of sins that men not only would in anger demonstrate toward God, but even in anger demonstrate toward one another, you know, to their fellow mankind, that caused Jesus to be crucified. In fact, in the third chapter of the book of Acts, and in the 13th verse beginning, we find that ignorance was the sin that crucified Christ. Now, you might be thinking, well, is ignorance sin? Well, just hang on a moment. But we'll notice here in Acts chapter 3 and verse 13 He says, now the God of Abraham, and this is Peter speaking, of course, as you're aware of. He says, now the God of Abraham and of Isaac and of Jacob, the God of our fathers, hath glorified his servant Jesus, whom you delivered up and denied before the face of Pilate when he had determined to release him. But you denied the holy and righteous one and asked for a murderer to be granted unto you and killed the Prince of Life. Pause there for just a moment and think about that. Now, he's not saying, now you were going, well, now if this is what God wants and we really don't like to do this and Jesus, if you're sure, you know, yeah, we'll do this. But that's not what hung Jesus on the cross, was it? It says here that they denied him, that Pilate was determined to release him, but they denied him, the holy and the righteous one. And they even asked for someone who was worthy of death to be released and to then kill Jesus. He says that you killed the Prince of Life. Now, of course, he's making the statements, as he says here, that God had already glorified him, as he said back here in the 13th verse, or recorded there. And what was that glorification? Well, it was this, when he says in the 15th verse, when you killed the Prince of Life, he said, whom God raised from the dead, whereof we are witnesses. And he goes on, he says, now by faith in his name hath his name made this man strong, whom you behold and know. Yea, the faith which is through him hath given him this perfect soundness in the presence of you all. And you can go back and you can read that, but I think you're probably acquainted with and familiar and remember that they just healed a man that had been lame, you know, for more than 40 years. And they're like, how in the world did you heal him? How was this done? And there, Peter's just explained that. He says, it was by faith in Jesus' name and that the authority and power that Jesus has to restore this man's health, he said, was done right here in the presence of you all. Now, Jesus had done miracles and signs in the second chapter there where we had in our scripture reading. He said, you know Jesus was approved of God because, you know, people saw the things that he did and people questioned, well, could a sinner do this? Could someone that on the outs with God, could someone that God, you know, hates, someone that God despises, would God work those kind of powers, you know, through him? And so he says, you know, there was, you know, glorification of him in doing that. And so he says, now even after his death, he said, this power is still being worked. And of course he is talking there about how that Jesus is no longer dead. He's raised from the dead and he's given these apostles this kind of authority. But we still haven't gotten to the point. I know that you're asking. You're going, Joe, you're telling us a lot of things we already know. So, but you said ignorance is a sin that crucified him. Well, the next verse, the next statement that Peter makes. He says, and now, brethren, I know that in ignorance you did it, as did also your rulers. He said, I know in ignorance that you did this. It's also some of your rulers. Well, we can notice in Acts chapter 17 and 30 that there was a time that God winked at or looked past over Saul's ignorance, he says in Acts 17:30. But now he commands men that they should all everywhere repent. And so we find that God says that he no longer just kind of ignores or overlooks or winks at this ignorance. He expects people to know better. He expects them to understand. He expects them to know, you know, what he has done. He expects them to know the gospel. He expects them to know the good news of God's love in the world of giving his only begotten Son. And so he doesn't wink at ignorance any longer. That still may not prove that that was a sin. But what we do know is like in John chapter 8 and verse 32, as well on this, that you shall know the truth and the truth shall make you free. What were they being free from? Well, that was their question there in Acts chapter 8, wasn't it? And they said, what are you saying? We haven't been a slave to anybody. And Jesus says, well, yeah, but you're a slave to sin. And if you know the truth, you don't have to be a slave to sin. You can be freed from that sin. We see, therefore, that the lack of knowledge of God's will allows for an opportunity for sin. And that's what it allowed for here. We find that instead of taking the testimony that God provided through the works and signs and the wonders that His Son did, they still decided to be ignorant. They didn't want to receive that. There are other reasons for that we're going to see. But you see, that ignorance allows man to remain in a sin. And therefore, ignorance is sin. It keeps us, it holds us, it binds us, you know, in a state of sinfulness. And therefore, that ignorance that they had been charged with was an ignorance of sinfulness that would cause them to crucify the Son of God. Now, some are ignorant because of a lack of information. They just don't know. But Jesus had performed these signs and wonders, and Jesus told them, this is your evidence, here's your sign, you know. You can accept it or not. And so many of them didn't accept it, did they? But He gave powerful signs and wonders. And so some may have not have seen what Jesus did. Maybe they didn't have that information. But others are ignorant by ignoring the information that is available. And you just think about how many people today are truly ignorant of who Jesus is and what He came to do and what good news is. I mean, they've heard of Him. Just about everyone has. And even in interviews of those that are religious, some interviews that I saw in this show about, like, with the Muslims. They said, yes, Jesus is mentioned 100 times in the Quran. But He's not God. And, you know, He wasn't the Son of God. He was a prophet, kind of like Muhammad, but He wasn't quite as great as Muhammad. You see, they know who Jesus is. Why would they even know that? Why would Muhammad have that recorded? Why would that be in the Quran? They knew, but they ignored it. We find that it talked about even I can't remember now what the religion was, but another religion they talked about, and they said, well, yes, we know who Jesus is and we accept Him to be a wise man, but that's what we do, is we accept wise people and their thoughts and their ideas, and He just taught a lot of the same things that wise men had been teaching for a long time, type of thing. In other words, the world knows who Jesus is, but have chosen for that understanding to be corrupted and to accept a lie instead of the truth. And many, many who should even know much better than they in our country, who just simply turn it off, that don't want to hear, don't want to know. It kind of reminds me of, you know, up northwest of Albuquerque is the Jemez Mountains. And up there in the Jemez Mountains, a really cool area, they have the Jemez Springs. And some of those springs are just cold springs, and they form a lake. Fenton Lake is one, and they have this a spring, you know, that runs down the mountainside that's really pretty. But then you get up a little higher in altitude in the mountains there, and you'll find in places where the water has pooled that mountain has been created by a volcano, and that volcano still kind of churns under the earth, and there are these hot, you know, pools of water. And there are these natural hot baths of water. And a lot of people go up there and they get in these hot baths of water. You know, I mean, just kind of a natural hot tub. Pretty neat and pretty cool. And I remember one time when we lived there that they had on the news how that some people were getting sick from the waters in those hot baths. And so they tested the waters, and they found out that there was some kind of amoeba that grew in those, in the hot waters. And if you went underwater, that rascal would go in your nose, and you'd get this character, you know, go in there and make you really sick. And so the news was up there, and they were, you know, interviewing people, and there were people in the hot spring just sitting there, and there's a tree right behind it, and there's that notice tacked on the tree. And so this reporter asked this woman that's in that hot spring there. She says, "Now you're in this hot spring. You're not afraid to be in this hot spring?" And she says, "No." And she says, "Did you read the notice?" And she said, "No." And said, "Well, did you see the notice?" She said, "Yes." She said, "You saw the notice, but you didn't read it?" She said, "Yes." She said, "Well, why didn't you read it?" She said, "Because I knew it would tell me something that I wouldn't want to be in these hot springs for, and I didn't want to know it." Now that's choosing to be ignorant, isn't it? That's ignoring, you know, the facts there. And the thing was that it didn't tell you couldn't be in them. It just said, "Don't put your head under the water." And yet, I wonder how many people said, "I don't know what that is, but I'm going to sit in anyway." Go under the water when they could have sat there and they just, all I had to do is just keep their head above the water, you know. But see, that's the good news of Jesus Christ. And ignorance continues to crucify Him even today. We find that people just ignore, don't want to know, because it tells them about their sins and they don't want to hear that, but it also tells them about how that you can have those sins cleansed. You can have them forgiven. I mean, it's good news. We find hatred is another sin that caused Jesus to be crucified. In John chapter 7, Jesus speaking to His own brothers here, His physical brothers, brothers of the flesh, He says this, "The world cannot hate you, but Me it hates, because I testify it that its works are evil." He says, the world can't hate you, but Me it hates, because its works are evil. We notice in the third chapter of John, in the 19th verse, this commentary that Jesus gives. It says, "And this is the judgment, that the light has come into the world, and men love the darkness rather than the light, for their works were evil. For everyone that does evil hates the light and comes not to the light, lest his works should be reproved. But he that does the truth comes to the light, that his works may be made manifest, that they have been wrought in God." And so you see here, Jesus knew that people hated Him. And we find that these rulers hated Him. And they looked for reasons, they looked for excuses to have Him crucified, to murder Him, to kill Him. And we see that hatred is, you know, a sin. In fact, in many respects, even the world disapproves of hatred. I don't know all the reasons for it, but we're always hearing things like hate's not a family value, or, you know, you shouldn't hate, you know, a person of a different race or a different culture or something like that. And, you know, and that's truth. But I guess it's kind of like, well, it depends on, you know, what you want to hate. And a lot of people hate Jesus even today. And we find that same kind of hatred caused Jesus to go to the cross. You see, God used that sin in man, man's own hatred for God Himself, to crucify God in the flesh, the Son of God. We notice that, like among these people, many of them would have claimed to have loved God. But what they didn't understand is that this sin of hatred even spoiled the love that they might have for God, or that they might think that they have for God. Over in 1 John chapter 4 and verse 20, we find that God reveals through this apostle, "If any man say, I love God and hates his brother, he's a liar. For he that loveth not his brother whom he hath seen cannot love God whom he hath not seen." And so you see here where that even those that thought maybe that they loved God and they were doing something for God when they crucified Jesus, they did so out of their hatred, and so they didn't even really love God. So hatred was a sin that caused Jesus to die upon the cross because they hated Him. You see then how God actually just used sinful man's own sins, the very things that Jesus came to die for in order to forgive man, that God used those same sins to have His Son crucified. We notice betrayal is one of those sins. And that one there too, maybe a little bit like ignorance, kind of ask the questions, we kind of ponder, well, you know, is that really sin? Well, betrayal acts upon a person. does something to them. Of course, in Jesus, it did something very significant. In Matthew chapter 26, verse 24 and 25, Jesus said, "The Son of Man goeth even as it is written of him, but woe unto that man through whom the Son of Man is betrayed. Good were it that that man, if he had not been born." And Judas, who betrayed him, answered and said, "Is it I, Rabbi?" And he said unto him, "Thou hast said." And then we bump down to the 47th verse of this same chapter, and we begin reading here. And it says, "And while he yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude with swords and staves, from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, Whomsoever I shall kiss, that is he, take him. And straightway he came to Jesus and said, Hail, Rabbi, and kissed him. And Jesus said unto him, Friend, do that for which thou art come. Then they came and laid hands on Jesus and took him." And so we know in this case, betrayal turned Jesus over to those who would kill him, knowing that they wanted to kill him, knowing that they probably would kill him. It's kind of interesting. I don't know just how true it is, but psychologists say that the effects of betrayal is considered to actually have a physical shock upon the body. That it creates a shock to the brain when people have been significantly betrayed by someone that they trust, or you know, someone that they were surprised that turned upon them, even causing similar effects to PTSD. Isn't that amazing? Now, that would be just as bad as hitting someone then, wouldn't it? And so if you think hitting someone would be wrong, be sinful, then, you know, betraying someone most certainly would be, you know, sinful. But most certainly in this case it is a sin because it led to the death of Jesus Christ, turning Jesus over to those whom Judas knew that were wanting to kill him. Now, the next sin aids in the result of Jesus being crucified as well, but it's probably some of the motive, at least, for Judas's betrayal. And we know that because we're going to use him as the example for this one. And that is the love of money. Now, the love of money doesn't necessarily have to be sin, maybe, but Paul said, you know, over in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And certainly here it was, wasn't it? It brought about an evil that caused the death of Jesus Christ. And we find that this sin was committed by one of Jesus' disciples, by the one who betrayed him. And he did so for money. Over in Matthew 26 and verse 14, it says, "Then one of the 12, who was called Judas Iscariot, went unto the chief priests and said, What are you willing to give me? And I will deliver him unto you. And they weighed unto him 30 pieces of silver." Now, we get a little more insight into Judas' motivation in selling Jesus out for, you know, this small amount of money, but nonetheless, you know, it could be significant enough, I guess. It was significant enough, you know, that it could buy Judas's testimony against Jesus. But we get this insight into Judas in the 12th chapter of John, verses 4 and 5. It says, "But Judas Iscariot, one of the disciples that should betray him, why was not this ointment sold for 300 shilling and given to the poor?" That's what Judas asked. John says, "Now this he said, not because he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief, and having the bag, took away what was put therein." And so we find that Judas, you know, had such a desire for money that he even stole from, you know, the contributions of people that had given to help for the ministry, you know, of Jesus, the work that he did, and helped support Jesus and his disciples as they went around, you know, for Jesus to do his work, his missionary work. And so truly, the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, and this worst evil of actually selling Jesus out and and causing and bringing about his death, his crucifixion, his murder. But people don't always sell Jesus out for hard cash, you know, for currency. But things of value that takes money to buy, you know, or maybe just things that we'd be willing to pay for, you know, to entertain us or to help us in some way to enjoy life a little bit more. In other words, just for a few worldly pleasures, people would sell Jesus out. Sunday fun day, you know. Can't really take time, you know, to honor him and to remember his death because this is my day off, this day that I have, you know, that I don't have to go to work and such. And so, you know, I need it for me. I need to enjoy it for myself. And so, you know, people might sell Jesus out for that little bit of entertainment. Might be that people sell people out just, you know, because of some desires of the flesh or some habit, you know, that they have and aren't willing to conquer or aren't willing to overcome, aren't willing to put off with that old man of sin. And so we find then that for them, it still crucifies Jesus afresh because they would just have Jesus remain upon the cross rather than become, you know, a disciple of his or a servant of his or, you know, desirous of knowing his will or having his will in his life. Well, there are still three sins that we need to consider here. And one of them is religious envy. We find over in Matthew chapter 27 and in verse 18 that even Pilate noticed that it was for envy that they had delivered Jesus up. Now, we've seen they hated him, and we've seen that they didn't love him as they should have. We've seen that, you know, that they did not want to come to the light because their works were evil, but also because of religious envy. It's not just envy that they bring Jesus to turn him over, but it's because of the loss of their place in their religion. And they could see that. They didn't want that, you know, to happen. And so for that reason, they would crucify Christ. And like I said, even you know, Pilate could recognize that. And maybe, you know, as being a man of the world, he might even recognize it more readily than those that, you know, seek to be righteous and try to, you know, see the good in others. But you're not going to fool someone who understands and knows those kinds of sins. He knew it. He understood it. And we find that it continues to hinder this truth about Jesus Christ today. Over in Acts chapter 13, verse 44 and 45, we read in this account, it says, "Now on the next Sabbath, almost the whole city was gathered together to hear the word of God. But when the Jews saw the multitudes, they were filled with jealousy and contradicted the things which were spoken by Paul and blasphemed." It can be a little bit of a difficult thing maybe to imagine the damage that's done by refusing God's truth and practicing error. But we can see that it's actually devastating, as illustrated here by this sin of religious envy, that it would cause Christ to be crucified. It will cause people's souls to be lost even today, because they will not believe the truth, because they will not accept the truth. And so it's just as deadly and just as dangerous today as it was then. And how dangerous was it? Well, it caused the murder of Jesus, didn't it? It caused him to be crucified, him to be put to death. We find false testimony, which of course, for the Jews, breaks one of the Ten Commandments. But we find that it's significant as well for us because false testimony is lying. It's not telling the truth. It's actually actively telling something contrary to the truth about another person that is deceptive and creates, you know, a wrong opinion or a wrong judgment. And here Jesus is on judgment for his life. And what happens when he is here being judged? He is on a trial for his life. Well, the 26th chapter of Matthew in the 60 verse, verse 59 and 60, let's read both of those. It records, "And now the chief priests and the whole council sought false witnesses against Jesus, that they might put him to death. And when they found it not, though many false witnesses came, but afterward came two witnesses, and they said, 'This man said, I'm able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days.'" But the point is they brought many false witnesses, but their testimony, we learn from other accounts, contradicted one another. And so, you know, it was invalid. But nonetheless, they came up with that. But then they had those that came and they said things that were truthful, but with false intent, didn't they? And that was is that they charged Jesus, you know, with making a claim that he would destroy the temple and then rebuild it in 3 days. And so that cost Jesus to be crucified. We find that Jesus informs us that the source of lies is the devil, is Satan. And says that he was a murderer from the beginning, and certainly to murder the Son of God would be nothing to him. And thus he was also then the father of lies, he tells us in that same passage there in John 8 and 44. So he is the instigator even of lies. And certainly the sin of false testimony aided in the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. And even today, false witnesses, that is corrupting the truth of God, corrupting God's truth, the things that God has revealed, it's devastating and destroys. I mean, those are words even that Peter uses over in 2 Peter chapter 2, beginning at verse 1. He says, "But there arose false prophets also among the people. As among you there shall be false teachers who shall privily bring in destructive heresies, denying even the master that bought them, bringing upon themselves swift destruction. And many shall follow their lascivious doings, by reason of whom the way of truth shall be evil spoken of. And in covetousness now they with feigned words make merchandise of you, whose sentence now from of old lingereth not, and their destruction slumbers not." You see, false testimony still is a sin that murders, that creates death, that destroys, that is devastating, that brings the sentence of death. And so, just as that sin of falsely implying things about what Jesus said caused His crucifixion, we find that it still brings about death even today. But see, it's just sin. God didn't have to convince people to crucify His Son. God didn't have to try to convince people that that was His will. That's what was just going to be necessary in order to do this. All God had to do was send His Son, and His Son reflect God in the flesh, and that was enough for men to hate Him. That was enough for men to betray Him. That was enough for men to sell Him out. That was enough for people just not to want to know anymore because they were satisfied with their ignorance and how it gave them comfort and afraid the truth would bring unrest in their life. All these things that brought about the death of Jesus Christ, you see, are actually the weaknesses and the sins of people, of mankind. Well, the last one that we notice is the fear of public opinion, which is the idea of cowardice, being fearful, coward. Faithless is another implication of that word according to the lexicons as used in Revelation chapter 21 and verse 8. But notice in John chapter 12 and verse 42, an account of which I know that you're familiar with, but at this point I realize that this doesn't cause the death of Jesus Christ at this particular point because He lives for a while after this. But over in John chapter 12, beginning here at verse 42, He says, "Nevertheless, even of the rulers, many believed on Him, but because the Pharisees, they did not confess it, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. For they love the glory that is of men more than the glory that is of God. But you see, because of their fearfulness, they would not confess it. And this comes from among the same body of people that try Jesus, that give Him that trial, that pass that sentence of death. And there would be those among them, as according to John's testimony here, that didn't believe that He was worthy of death, believed that He was the Son of God, but they just kept their mouths shut because they didn't want to lose their position, didn't want to lose their place. And so we find that they feared, they were faithless, they were cowardness in this. Over in Mark chapter 15, and in verse 15, we read, though even on the very crucifixion of Jesus Christ, how lack of courage allowed Jesus to go to the cross, when it says, and Pilate, wishing to content the multitude, released unto them Barabbas, and delivered Jesus when he had scourged him to be crucified. And so, because Pilate wouldn't stand up, because he wanted to keep the peace, because of cowardice, we find that Jesus was allowed to be taken to the cross, be scourged, given the charge to his own soldiers to take him out, nail him to the cross, and to crucify him. You see, it's pretty easy to see who crucified Jesus. The Jewish leaders did, didn't they? The crowd that said, crucify him, crucify him. They're a big part of the reason why Jesus was crucified, weren't they? So they would be the who. Pilate, Roman governors, Gentiles, they would be the who, wouldn't they? The soldiers from Pilate that carried out the charge of beating Jesus and crucify him, they would be the who, wouldn't they? But we see the very sins and the weaknesses in their sins, in the lives, in the personal lives of these individuals that we just mentioned, some by name, some by class, some by, you know, order of who they were, are really just the very sins that all people find to be accountable for, aren't they? And so the who really just means everyone who is of an age of accountability for their sin is who crucified Jesus. And the what is because of their sins. Well, the effect in our life is just as dangerous as it was to Jesus. Jesus had no sin, but sin had a dangerous effect, didn't it? It caused him to die. But you see, sin in our life also has a dangerous effect. It will cause us to die. More tragically, though, the most dreaded of deaths, the second death, the eternal separation from God. But the good news is, Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And I don't say that as to be something funny. I say that as something to be ironic. That the very sins that was crucifying him upon the cross are the very sins that he hung upon the cross in order to atone for. And he atoned for yours and mine. And if you're subject to this invocation for that atonement, then we would encourage you to use this opportunity to